the view of the sequester from China.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. And we're now just 2 days away from the sequester, which would slash spending across the federal government, including an 8% cut to this year's Pentagon budget. Over the next decade, defense cuts would equal $500 billion. The outgoing defense secretary, Leon Panetta, has called it a shameful act of irresponsibility, especially given the rapid rise of military spending in China. Marketplace's China correspondent Rob Schmitz reports.
Now that a budgetary doomsday scenario has been laid out for the world's largest military, you might think China would see this as its golden opportunity to assert itself regionally. Think again, says Gene Sanrong, international relations professor at Beijing's Renmin University.
In the coming years, the defense budget will be cut, but the military power of the United States is far ahead of China.
But China's catching up. Last September, Beijing revealed the country's first aircraft carrier. 10 years ago, the U.S. spent 19 times what China spent on defense. This year, it was down to 5 times. Shen Dingli, dean of the Center for American Studies at Fudan University, estimates in 10 years, the U.S. will spend $500 billion a year on its military, while China's defense budget will be close behind at $300 billion.
That'll certainly have a serious impact on military power in the Pacific. The U.S. won't have enough money to support its naval forces at that point, and China will.
But China has benefited from the global stability provided by a strong U.S. military. For example, U.S. intervention in Iraq in 1990 helped China, says Shen, by stabilizing global oil prices. And for China, a big military could mean big responsibilities and bigger expenditures.
I think China should actually decrease military spending alongside the U.S.
In other words, says Shen, cuts in military spending could be good news on both sides of the Pacific. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Well, the latest polling from USA Today and the Pew Research Center finds a majority of Americans support President Obama's plan to raise the minimum wage to $9 an hour. But House Speaker John Boehner says that would reduce employment. The minimum wage debate is also taking place right now in Germany, where politicians are debating whether to have a federal minimum wage at all. Reporter Christopher Wirth has the story.
Germany doesn't have a national minimum wage. In fact, it's one of the few countries in Europe that doesn't. Instead, German trade unions have always negotiated their own basic pay, industry by industry. Damian Grimshaw is an expert on minimum wages at Manchester Business School. He says Germany might be the economic engine of Europe, but German wages have stagnated over the past decade, some as low as $3 to $4 an hour.
So it's not a model of economic growth that's brought steady improvements in real levels of income and earnings.
He says 20% of German workers earn what's considered low pay. That is two-thirds below the median wage in the country. The idea of introducing a national minimum wage of over $11 has become a contentious issue ahead of elections in Germany later this year. Waltraud Scheckel of the London School of Economics says doing so would help solve a long-standing problem. Germans aren't big spenders because of their meager incomes.
People on low wages, if you raise their wage a little bit, they are so hard up against budget constraints that they would happy to spend all that. So in that sense, you could even stimulate the economy.
But as it stands now, because employers pay very little, the German government picks up the tab in higher welfare benefits to help workers make ends meet. It's a corporate subsidy, Scheckel says Germany should do without. I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in global trading this morning, up 0.25% in Hong Kong. Same deal right now in London and Frankfurt, 0.6% higher in Paris. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow rebounded 115 points to close at 13,900.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now to a lawsuit that could eventually impact the way we pay for cable. Cablevision is suing Viacom because, the cable company says, it shouldn't have to pay for channels that aren't popular with subscribers. Marketplace's David Gura joins us live with the details. Good morning.
Hey, Jeremy.
So what are the specifics of the lawsuit here?
Well, Viacom is a big media company, and it owns several channels that a lot of people watch. And here I'm talking about Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, just to name a few. But Viacom also owns some channels that, frankly, are not as popular. You know, I'm having a really tough time remembering the last time I watched VH1 Classic, Jeremy, or CMT. But anyway, this is about what's called bundling. Cablevision says it can't get the rights to air those big channels unless it pays for those other ones. And the company argues that's unfair to its subscribers. You know, cable bills have gone up, and Cablevision claims bundling is a big reason why that's happening.
So what are the possible ramifications of the lawsuit?
Well, they could be huge. I mean, Cablevision is the fifth largest cable operator in the U.S. We could see other cable providers get in on this, maybe a few satellite providers as well. Look, this argument that bundling doesn't benefit consumers has been around for a while, and the refrain is, you know, we want more choice. And there's a lot at play here, including the fact that the internet does give TV viewers more choice.
Right.
And sort of pick and choose what you watch and when you watch it. And, Jeremy, that's something media companies and cable companies are paying very close attention to.
So when do you get to stop paying for VH1 Classics, David?
Don't hold your breath. I mean, these two companies have a lot of lawyers. I'd say sit back, put on CMT, and just wait a while.
Or CMT Classic. I don't know if there is
one. There you go. Not yet.
Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And finally, I never thought yogurt was gender specific, but a company called Powerful Yogurt has created a new high protein yogurt just for men. They're promoting it as a way to maintain muscle mass and improve digestion. The food blog Grub Street has dubbed it Brogurt. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.